Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Episode von Kickers Radio. Diese Woche habe ich einen ganz speziellen neuen Gast für euch mitgebracht. Gegenüber sitzt mir die Clara Sophie Skovgaard-Hansen. Ob ich es jetzt richtig ausgesprochen habe oder nicht, das wird sie uns gleich nochmal erklären. Clara ist 23 Jahre alt, kommt aus Dänemark und ist seit dem Jahr 2025 Gravel-Profi. Seit ein paar Monaten arbeiten wir im Coaching zusammen und heute hat sie die weite Reise auf sich genommen von Dänemark, Koblenz, Girona, wo ihr aktueller Wohnort ist, um in eine Episode des Kickers Radios zu kommen und um einen Tag hier bei uns im Kickers Office zu verbringen. Der weitere Podcast wird auf Englisch laufen. Wir haben jetzt schon den ganzen Tag hier verbracht. Hoffentlich ist unser Englisch noch einigermaßen gut verständlich. Und ihr dürft euch freuen auf einen Einblick in den Profi-Radsport, vor allen Dingen der Frauen, den wir in den letzten Wochen in den Podcast-Aufnahmen im Profisport ja schon immer weiter aufgebaut haben, wo wir auch den Leon Kaiser zu Gast hatten und auch mit Philipp darüber gesprochen haben. Und ich freue mich sehr, dass Clara mir heute gegenüber sitzt. Hello, Clara.
Hello. Thank you for the intro. Actually, you know, we have German in school in Denmark, so I kind of understood everything you said.
That's great. So the second part of the podcast will then be in German, I'd say, when our brains are pretty much used from all day talking in English. And then at least for me, it will get easier to speak in German.
Yeah, probably not for me then.
Yeah, but that's fine. I think that's fine. Yeah. But what you can do for our listeners right now is probably tell us how we pronounce your name correctly.
Yes, I think you did a really good job, actually. But it is Clara Sophie Skovgaard-Hansen.
Okay, yeah, I think I missed the Skovgaard part and did mispronounce that a bit. But tell us a bit about you. Right now you're living in?
Yeah, at the moment I'm living in Girona in Spain. I'm from Copenhagen. I have been living in Copenhagen all my life. But a few years ago, when I finished high school, basically, I decided to try to do my sport more professionally. So I got a remote job on the computer and moved to Spain on my own and tried to see where it would take me performance-wise to focus more on the sport. And now a few years later, I am now professional. So it in some way worked out, but it has been a long journey. But I am in Girona at the moment, yeah, living there.
Great. I think for most of the listeners right now, Girona, if we think about Girona, that's one part of Spain where we know there's a lot of cyclists being over there, a lot of pro road teams as well being there for training camps, especially over the winter period or in the spring period. And for me, if I think about Girona, I think about sun all the time and 20 to 30 degrees all the time. But I think right now, since I'm coaching you, I know that it's not the case that it's all the time 20 to 30 degrees in Girona. So how is winter looking in Girona?
Yeah, I mean, the first few years I was there, we always had sun, like only maybe a week of rain over the full winter. But this year has been like extraordinary bad. We have had so much rain. So actually, I have been also been more in southern Spain this winter than usual. And just last week we had rain almost every day. I am lucky to be blessed with a lot of swift riding. So
that's from my part then.
Yes, exactly. But it makes it a bit more purposeful than when it's actually raining. It can be nice to swift inside. But still, I'm from the north of in Denmark, so I'm used to way colder winters, so I'm not complaining. It is still more pleasant to be in 10, 15 degrees in winter, I would say.
Yeah, I agree, definitely. And I think for all of us being in the region around Heidelberg right here, we had a pretty rough winter this year, which was also nice because we had the first snow for a couple of days or for more than one day, actually, since a couple of years, which was also nice to see. And it's also some kind of magical atmosphere in the winter always. But of course, for training outdoors or being professional in an outdoors sports, it's hard to know that you have to do the training indoors, even though it's part of the game.
For sure.
As well.
For sure. Yeah, yeah, this is what I think in Denmark it was the coldest winter in 20 years or something. Mm-hmm. So really we cannot complain in Spain. But it's not the Spanish dream we're living at the moment.
Yeah, okay, but that's as you just said, it's also fine, of course. But if we step backwards again. So right now you're in Girona, mm-hmm. you're living there since a couple of months or since a couple of years, as mm-hmm. we can say right now. You share an apartment with your boyfriend, who's also pro in gravel racing. Mm-hmm. So you're living a pro lifestyle, the
yes.
two of you both
yes.
together. Mm. But before all that happens,
yes.
your sporting career started at some point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, now fast forward, I just moved in with my with my pro gravel boyfriend as well. So that is like a very new chapter for me. But I have been racing bike basically all my life. I started with mountain biking when I was very little with my dad. I think he bought me a bike when I was 6 years old. So I have been riding around the forest for fun mm-hmm. For many years and with the boys in the local mountain bike club, I don't know, 2-3 times a week, but always been a part of this very male-dominated environment. And have like just grew up with having fun on the bike mm-hmm. a lot and didn't really race or compete until way later. I started, then I went to this, in Denmark we take a year off after finishing the like before high school, like the school you're in for 10 years. So then we take a year off and I went to a mountain bike school and I was so fascinated by these boys who went to the European championships mm-hmm. and stuff. And I thought, okay, maybe I should try do some races in the Danish league. So around, I think, under 17 it's called, and then before juniors, I started racing more. And yeah, I got my ass kicked so much the first few years because from just goofing around on the mountain bike to start racing more disciplined and like cross-country racing is just, you have to be very focused and like do everything right to be in the game. But even in the Danish scene, I saw improvements and I started, racing more UCI races. Like we have a UCI, some UCI races in Denmark, but also did some World Cups around mm-hmm. Europe and was with the Danish national team for a few years. Also became Danish champion and stuff. So I knew that I had some kind of, at least on a national level, some kind of potential maybe, but every time I came, went to race World Cups or like courses like in Novo Mesto and like mm-hmm. just these very challenging technical courses, I really saw that, okay, I'm from a flat country and I do need more technical skill on a daily basis. So when I first moved to Girona, I was actually still just racing mountain bike. Mm-hmm. And the first few winters, I did not live there, but I was there for 3 weeks and did the race in Banyoles, mm-hmm. this pre-season race, and just goofing around with the other mountain bikers. But yeah, I don't know. I think I found out that I really like to spend a lot of hours on the bike. So I tried to do mountain bike marathons and did world champs in mountain bike marathon 1 year, racing with the elite as a first year junior. And actually had quite a good experience in that race on an international level mm-hmm. also, where it was the first time that I actually had success in the international scene. And then I started to see, okay, maybe mountain bike marathon, we don't really have any races in Denmark. And there are just not so many marathon races in Europe anymore, which are big. So I tried a few UCI gravel races because it was so similar, and I actually had quite a good experience from the very first one I did because I saw how you can combine like the technical skill in some way, especially on the gravel bike, and then me just love spending hours. Mm-hmm. It was something I was always criticized for when I did cross country, especially from the national team, that I was training way too much for as a like what a cross country racer should maybe do. But then I had instant like success, but personal success in the more endurance sport as gravel is. And then I swapped my whole I had like 2 good races in the UCI, and Pass Racing contacted me the first year if I wanted to join the team. So that was back in 2024. So that was kind of my first full gravel season. And I had, yeah, also great experience from the very beginning. It's not a paid team, but they give us very good surroundings and helps us with like everything around racing, accommodation and support and everything. And I ended up having quite a good first season. I podiumed at Traca and yeah, podiumed in most UCI and Earth Series races that I did. And I, at this point, I was 21, so by far still the youngest in this sport.
Yeah, bursting onto the scene.
Yeah,
Some would say, and definitely you felt that yourself.
I felt that because also, I mean, endurance comes with age, but I think I found a loophole in me just being quite skilled, especially for a race like Traca, which is 200K. I went solo from the beginning and kind of did my own thing with like on the descents and stuff. So had really good experience with that. And I was lucky to, yeah, of course people saw this as my first year. So in the end of the year, I was lucky to, or very pleased to sign my first pro contract with Canyon. I signed 2 years with them and other partners, SRAM on the side and Rafa and stuff. But now I am on my second year as a pro in 2026, still racing for Canyon. So yeah, that's also a bit fast forward because I had my first year with Canyon was in 25, but which was a bit of a roller coaster. I got injured twice.
Yeah, I think we'll come into into more detail also later in that
for sure
episode.
Absolutely, but where I am now is I'm still racing for Canyon. This is also one of the reasons I'm here today. I visited the HQ yesterday, and yeah. Got a new bike and just the practical stuff in Koblenz. And now, yeah, made the trip here to visit you in Heidelberg, which is also such a pleasure.
Yeah, it's also for all the listeners out there, it's the first time we are meeting in person since working together since the beginning of November, roughly. And having the first call we had was probably in the end of October or beginning of November. I'm not sure about the date right now exactly, but it was the first time when we spoke together. So the three of us, Philip, you and me, and we then always saw us through a screen and not in person. And you being here today in person and also getting to know each other as one part, but also setting standards and goals for the upcoming weeks. I'm speaking about what has been done in the past, what will the future bring, is very nice, actually. But I'd like to come back to how you answered the question I asked you in the beginning right now. And I think I can tell that you did very, very well because you made a couple of minutes, you know, made it clear to everyone listening out there who you are as a gravel pro right now and how your sports history with certain time steps has been looking, which is very nice. And a lot of people out there think can get a perspective on how your sports career went, even though knowing there were some ups and downs throughout the way.
Absolutely.
Through every season. But what I also want to emphasize is that it was not only you bursting onto the scene then in the gravel scene when you did the second place in Traca, when actually for me in that year when you did the podium in Traca and the second place was the first time I personally heard about your name. Because beforehand, then during the mountain bike events you did and the mountain bike podiums and wins you had, I didn't know about that moment. And that was huge then when the Traca happened.
Absolutely.
Also for you as a probably social media experience and stuff, and also people reaching out to you afterwards because it was not expected beforehand.
Absolutely.
And that's what I meant by bursting onto the scene into gravel races, even though knowing that the mountain bike races you did before, you were not, in Germany we would say, unbeschriebenes Blatt. I'm not sure what the correct translation is in English, but it's not like that the trucker was your first pro race.
No, exactly. And no, I was not in any way a part of the mountain bike scene back then. Maybe, yeah, in Denmark, but Denmark is a small country, so I'm very aware of that. And I think that was why the whole gravel adventure that year and the whole tracker experience was such a turning point in my career, basically, because I was not training harder or differently or approaching anything differently than I had done for years. I was just in, found a spot to finally fit into, kind of. And and that came to give me podiums, but also just so many great experience and to finally feel like I fitted because...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, belonging somewhere.
Yeah, exactly, because cross-country, the level was just always like, it's maybe, in my opinion, one of the most competitive cycling disciplines out there. You need to be skilled in so many ways.
Yes.
Where in, it's really not to talk down, but in road racing, some people can hide a bit in the bunch. Where in mountain biking, you're just so exposed because you are an individual athlete. If you do shit, everyone can see it. If you do good, everyone can see it. So there is no hiding. And I think I found similar in gravel racing. It's also really hard to hide there. If you're not skilled, you will not get anywhere. If you're not strong, you will also not get anywhere. So I think for me, gravel racing is just such a cool sport because it features... both things that I love the technical aspect, but I also love just being out for many, many hours in both racing, but also in training.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you just said you experienced very highs, then podium in Trucker, and then the year afterwards.
Yeah.
Also getting to, you already spoke about it, about the last year, what happened last year, that you not had a year which you are fully satisfied with, but that's not only performance-wise, that's also because you did some races, and especially when you did Unbound last year, and you made there an experience for yourself, which for all listeners out there, probably some of them read about that in the internet, that you had a crash in Unbound, and then that afterwards you were left on the track or on the road, on the gravel road, at that point, just in, as we would say, on the gutter.
Absolutely.
And there were like media stuff and all other cyclists going by, and you not getting help.
You explained it very well. It is this big race, Unbound. Probably most people in the sport has heard of it, but if not, it's meant as being the biggest gravel race we have in the world, basically. It's where we have the biggest bonuses, you get the most exposure if you win it. It is 300...
Most media time.
Most media time. It is live streamed, which not so many of our races are. It's 320 kilometers, 200 miles. So it's also a very, very big effort. And it was my first time racing it. And I was there with Canyon last year. It's in the end of May. So just like a little month after Trucker. This race is not a technical race. It is basically straight, flat, fast racing, 20K. Then you take a turn, another 20K. It's a really boring course. But I was unlucky to crash early in the race. We were in a big bunch and somebody dropped a bottle and I just couldn't avoid it. So I crashed and completely ripped my shoulder apart, basically. I torn over all my ligaments and my biceps was torn off and it was just really, I've never been in so much pain, but I was just laying there on the side. I also broke my helmet in two and my knee was cut open. So basically I was laying on the side of the course. It was not very pleasant. And saw, basically the whole field pass by. All amateurs, all elite riders. I mean, maybe 500,000 or like 500 to 1,000 people passing. And I was laying there and wondering why is there no support? And I saw helicopters live streaming, but... no ambulance, no helicopter picking me up. And I started, it was very not good. Finally, I got help. But it's that was just a very big turning point in my career. I ended up being injured for a long time. One thing is breaking a collarbone. The doctors often tells me that I wish I broke my collarbone, because to reestablish or like sew back together ligaments and muscle, yes, it is just soft tissue. It takes forever to recover. So basically, I ended up finishing my season already in the end of May, because I had to recover and establish everything after this. Like, I was in a set sling for, I don't know, a month and a half or something, mm-hmm, before I could start reestablishing it. A knee that needed to also get back into business and everything. So I basically spent most summer recovering that, and then started to swift indoors. I was not allowed to ride outside for 3 months. Basically got back into training and started with you. You kind of got an athlete who started from scratch, but had a lot of experience in the past. But I felt like I was back to scratch, you know? So that has also been quite interesting to, start completely over from my sake, because I have never been injured. And I think in cycling, it's very rare that you get so seriously injured. I mean, we do break a collarbone, but to be out of the sport for so long is also hard for the brain, but also benefited me in other ways. I mean, I have not had a break off the bike since I started, and I think my body recovered in a different way on many levels.
But I think what we can definitely say for all the people listening right now is that breaking a collarbone is also huge, and for lots of people out there, getting back on the bike after a broken collarbone takes time.
Yeah.
Because also that's then the good thing on a pro level, that you get access through your network to doctors and stuff afterwards, then when the diagnosis is there, and that also then recovery treatments, depending on who you get to as a person, because that's always the case, and a lot is person dependent, but then you'll also get the recovery treatments in a very well way and can recover quicker to get sooner back on the bike.
Absolutely.
And as we can see, for example, like I think Mats Pedersen broke his collarbone and his wrist a couple of weeks ago. 2 weeks afterwards, he's already back on the bike and training out there, and that's for me, thinking about knowing that someone will break his or her collarbone on a ride outdoors as a recreational athlete, then the first appointment you'll get to fix the collarbone is probably around 2 or 4 weeks after the crash.
True. Yeah,
and then it will take a lot more time. So that's also think one thing we could emphasize.
Absolutely.
But what I'd like to speak about even further is, how did the crash you had there made you think about racing overall in that moment? Because it's not a nice experience. Mm-hmm. It also takes a lot of time to recover, to be back racing.
Yeah.
And this also means that there is some... you feel a bit of fear also getting back to racing, or thinking about racing. So how was that feeling afterwards for you?
I think... the thing is, one thing that is positive is that it was not due to my own technical skills, or it was not my own fault, basically. It was something from the outside that was out of my control. So in that way, I am lucky to not have some trauma that I was not good enough or I caused this. So this has made me look at the situation more from the outside, in the way that it could have happened to anyone. It's not because I am a bad athlete or I'm bad at my job. It was actually quite out of my hands in some way. So that has been a help. But what is the hard part is that coming from mountain bike racing, it is just an individual sport in the way that you cause the crash if you crash. It is so rare that somebody crashes you out in mountain bike racing. And now I am in a sport where other can actually decide what your race is going to look like. If they crash in front of you, they will take you with them. Or if something happens, now somebody dropped a bottle and it is not this person's fault, but it does happen in racing, and that ended up taking me out. So this is what kind of makes me fear races now that is in higher pace and in a bunch, like with road racing. But on the other hand, you also can't fear things that is mm-hmm. out of your control, because then we could fear every scenario that could happen. But it is definitely, I am very happy that it, like, I don't think it has impacted my confidence so much. Where if I, let's say I tried to do a cool jump and I then mm-hmm. crashed, maybe that would affect my confidence on next time I had to do a jump. But as far, I mean, the season just started and I am just entering racing again. Mm-hmm. But so far, I am not scared. But I think what the hardest impact for me was all the time where I was injured. Because when I crashed first, they didn't diagnose me well. Mm-hmm. So they just, I mean, I dislocated the shoulder. So they put it back on and they sent me home. Mm-hmm. And I kept telling the doctors in Denmark, oh, my arm is not working. Mm-hmm. And they were kind of laughing at me and saying, yeah, it will get back in business. And then after, it went so long before they actually realized, okay, I needed more scans and it was actually really bad. And the biceps was deattached. It took them a long time. So the time from the crash to the surgery, to the recovery of surgery, was more than half a year it took in total. And in this half year, I was just being an person that was not me, because I am an athlete. I wake up every morning and I'm excited to ride my bike. And now I had to reinvent, like, one thing is laying in bed and recovering, but also just how does my brain work when I don't wake up and do my mm-hmm. purpose? So that has definitely been the biggest thing, like, will I ever become good again? And will I ever be a competitive racer again? But this is something that still strikes my mind, like, every week or every other week, that, hey, will I ever reach this level again? So this is the hard part, when your identity becomes, like, challenged in some way. But at the moment, I am starting to see so much progress. I mean, I was back racing. The race didn't go super well. It is a race called Santaval in Girona a few weeks ago. In some way, it didn't go so well. I mean, I was sick. I did race with a bit of sickness, but it was still such a... So I didn't race both stages. But it was a very positive experience for me, because I felt like I returned home mm-hmm. to racing and to what I lost in this half yeah. year and all the comeback time. So in some way, like, my life starts to... Oh, not my life, because it is just cycling, but the whole purpose of my identity starts to make more sense again.
Reshape again. Yeah,
reshape again. And, like, actually, I start to see also, I mean, I am with the, in my opinion, the coolest team in the world with Canyon, to kind of see myself, okay, I do have a place here. Because when you're injured, you wonder why they still support you, because yeah. you think I failed on the biggest scene. But it is also a part of the game. And yeah, I think all athletes go through this at some point.
Yeah, exactly. And you start questioning things because also you get to think about those things more than before, because you have more time. Mm. And that's the hard part also as well, to find strategies for yourself to get self-efficient again. Or it's also called self-efficacy or self-efficiency. I'm pretty sure it's called self-efficacy, or in German Selbstwirksamkeit, which we are also speaking a lot about with athletes, because it's getting to learn things and learning to not always test the body week in, week out in training. And if we look back to the beginning, when we started working in November and we had the start, the first things we did was that we just said, okay, Clara, we have to adjust your power numbers and we have to see where are you standing right now.
Yeah.
And especially after a longer period of getting back towards health and regaining also power again on the bike, this feels hard, because you know how you felt when you were doing a podium in Trucker.
Yeah.
And you know how you felt in the beginning of the 2025 season, in February, for example, 2025. And then you can also see, okay, if I'm doing the same power numbers, my heart rate goes through the roof.
Yeah.
And that's only one thing. Mm. And it takes a lot out of you to be as honest to yourself to also accept it.
Mm.
And I think that's the next thing, the good thing about all of the things which happened last year is that you learned yourself the hard way, of course, but you learned a lot about yourself and what happens when you're not able to race and when you're not able to train like you trained, where you could do that the way before. And what we can definitely also say is probably for all listeners out there that before you had the crash then at Unbound, the whole 2025 season and the build-up to the 2025 season was some sort of razor-sharp build because the what we discovered, the two of us then together, was that there was a very high energy expenditure in your training week in, week out, and that you couldn't match intensities because, like, the base training rides were usually ridden too high in power numbers, and then there was not enough energy left for those harder sessions.
Yeah, absolutely.
So then your capacity and your health shrinking together and building a very unstable system at some point.
Absolutely.
And also, probably doctors also told you after the crash you had that your bone density at some point was lower. That's also why one thing why the crash hit you so hard, because your bone density at that moment in time was also very low.
Absolutely.
So that was the, I think, the main thing what you discovered yourself is getting back to health through the recovery period, not only from the crash, but also establish for yourself a menstrual cycle again. Because if you look back onto the last 6 years, and if you think about how stable your menstrual cycle over that period was, and if you want to take the listeners into that.
Yeah, but absolutely. I mean, yeah, I didn't have a regular cycle since I almost got my period for the first time. I think if I look back until I was 16, I didn't get, for some years, I didn't get it at all. I could go 2 years without having my period at all. Even in off-season breaks, I was still just underfueled and, basically didn't have enough, like, energy available. And it was something that I think, luckily, I went to an athlete school and I had my previous coach was also good as, like, pointing this out and asking me the questions. So I went to different scans, different dietists, spoke with my doctor about it, but I think for me, and the thing is, the way to fix it is to be in a surplus in energy.
Exactly.
And I think, and for a longer time. And for a long time, I tried, like, I convinced myself that I tried hard to eat more and gain a bit of weight and stuff like this. But at the end of the day, it's also a very mental thing. It was really, for me, especially in cycling and especially in mountain biking, we see it a lot, the low weight, and that it is super effective to be light when you have to do 10 climbs or 20 climbs in one race or whatever. And I think for a long time I tried, but at some point I also, I tried, but not really hard enough and not honest enough. But when I then started gravel racing, I don't think there was no way to get around this anymore. Because basically, if you are not having enough energy, you're not going to make it through 300K. And you're just not going to have enough to rely on if you are, both challenging your body and how much that weighs, but also just how much energy is available. That just didn't work anymore. Like, one thing is cross-country racing. It's 1.5 hour. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's healthy, but you can make it through on gels and caffeine. Where when you start to race track at 200 of 6 hours, I bonked completely the last 2 hours and I was caught and lost my win, but ended in second place. And I think that was just, and I was very proud of the second place, so it's not that. But I think I just got aware of, okay, there is some metabolic changes we need to do here. So I started try my best to regain it, but still didn't quite get there. But in relation to my crash and my time off, it actually came back my period came back in a regular cycle. For the first few cycles, it was a bit on and off and not super steady. But actually, as we re-entered training and I started working with you, it was one of the first thing that we addressed. And one of the first thing you asked me actually also required to get a bone density test. Because as we talked about, I mean, I had the crash, but also even earlier in the year, back in before I crashed at Unbound, earlier in that year, I also had a sacrum fracture. Mm-hmm. That kind of came out of nowhere. It was a very small, silly crash, and I ended up fracturing, basically my spine. And that was where I knew also that these past years, as a young teenager, underfueling really had impact on my bone density. And we, with cycling, we don't have so much impact on the bone, so to keep that density up, it requires that we do also conscious decisions with gym work and walking or running. I don't walk or run, but I do gym, so I'm very aware of that as well. But also to never being an energy deficiency. So that was started working with you. One of the first thing we addressed, and we started fueling more during the training. And I had in the beginning, and we still do, like measure temperature to see how we go throughout the cycle. Just accepting that a cycle is also a part of a healthy athlete, but also a healthy female, because at the end of the day, I want a long career, and I also do want to have kids one day. Right now, it's very important for me to perform, but my biggest dream is to perform for the next 10 or 15 years and to keep living like this. Now we're increasing the volume, and while we have been doing this, I still keep a steady and strong menstrual cycle, which I am honestly so proud of, because I have been struggling and been on and off for so many years, and it has been hard to deal with, but also it has been a mental thing. So to now accomplish or like achieve this is something that takes, it gives me confidence also that I can work really hard, but still stay healthy. And I know also just from my parents and my mom's side that they are super happy to hear this. And when I speak about our coaching, how, you adjust my plan and we reflect on how I'm feeling week to week, but also according to the cycle and temperature changes, blah, 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 actually just makes so much sense, because we are not, like, it is such a complex we have such a complex body as females, so it would be silly to not look at it or like not take it into account. But I think most athletes doesn't try to not care or acknowledge that they have mood swings, but doesn't like look into what effect it actually has on their body or on their training.
Yeah. Fully agreed. And as Laura would say right now, that the menstrual cycle is her superpower. Mm. It is really like that. And you just said yourself that you are feeling very proud about that your cycle reestablished and is stronger than ever before. And you should be. That's very, very, that's also the thing then that makes me really happy. Then also getting the feedback from training and every time we speak is knowing that that is the first task to establish a working system over time and making you ready to develop over time and making you ready for long-term development and making sure over longer period of times we can establish a system that is rock solid and then every now and then we'll set new standards and get to new tasks. Because also training for, that's the thing for pro athletes and recreational athletes, training is filled with different tasks. And it's not only a task to meet intensity goals. There is a lot of more tasks. And especially for us in the beginning, when we spoke about that, you knew that I was putting in fueling strategies for you for your training rides. And beforehand, you did 3-hour training rides with one bottle or two bottles of around 500 milliliters of water and probably a Red Bull in between. And we especially spoke about a Red Bull in the beginning. And I was asking you how many of those Red Bulls are you chunking down. But jokes aside, that's one of the things why you feel that you are not fully emptied after training rides and that you feel that from day to day you can perform.
Absolutely. But I think, it's such a mindset thing, because I think what I also speak with other people about is the reason we often, I think, under fuel is because we think, then I can't eat so much afterwards and I would have to restrict myself. But the thing is, we want the energy when we are training.
Exactly.
So this is where we want to eat it and we want to, use it for our benefit. And I think this is also just a mental thing that often, can get in our way, because I would go do 3 hours and have one bar in my pocket and consume, 30 grams of carbs for my 3-hour ride, which just sounds so silly now that we have so, specific both, hydration targets, but carb targets in the training. And of course, we need to do it in training, because in races, we try to aim even higher carbs it's a harder effort. But we need to, reflect that into what we do on a daily basis. And as we have talked about with the way we're training now, we split many of my days into double days. And I can some days, 3 hours in the morning and 2.5 in the afternoon, with a strong recovery time in between, where I probably lay on the couch and refuel the first session. And in the end of the day, I can finish with, close to 5 or 6 hours and not even feel so tired. I probably am, but I feel more on top than if I did a long 5-hour ride with high intensity efforts. So in this way, I think it also just supports, back to my whole menstrual cycle, that to never being
low in energy,
but actually keep it stable throughout the week, but also just throughout one day, to never be in a deficit in that way. And I think this is I can say this is the future, but it's not new. The female body has always worked like this. But I think it's more putting it to attention. And
And it's also for you, it's new to feel that you are not completely tired after every second training, right? Or that you feel the need to cut down efforts in time. So in the past, for example, if they were 3 times 20 minutes, then it could have happened that the first 20 minutes would be done according to plan, and then it split into 4 by 10 minutes afterwards to make the efforts shorter, to not feel the need to push for that long, because you were that low in energy at that moment in time. So that's also one thing probably we can say you learned for yourself right now, is that change does not only need to do things very, very strict at some point or to be very serious about these things. It's also to embrace new things.
Absolutely.
And have trust over time, because training is not there to make you test your body every week.
No.
And especially in the beginning, we spoke a lot of about this, because testing the body week in, week out will make you underperform in races then, or will not make you develop as much as you could in that period over time.
Exactly. And I think when we started, we lowered my zones. And in the beginning, I was just frustrated. And the thing is, we can't keep looking at our past when there is so much history in between. So I think at some point, in the beginning, I then tested myself every week, and it was not doing a test, but it would be go all out on some segment that I had done before and kind of compare. And you would write in my Training Peaks, "What the hell was this? Clara, what are you doing?" And I mean, I think as soon as I let go of what I used to do and actually just trusting the plan, because I did trust the plan, but I also needed to convince my brain and my old habits that, hey, we follow a plan, it started to go better and easier. And I think our whole training coaching relationship went better because there was more trust in between, that you also knew that if I went out, did something completely silly, you knew that I not regretted it, but at least knew that I didn't do things right. And I think to get these lines straight just makes it also better to work together, that we know we have the same goal and the same ambition with the things. Sometimes it's not streamlined. I mean, I am not perfect, so I also do go out ride with the boys from every once in a while, but maybe it's not the most efficient thing to do. But there is also something like trying to find balance in the perfect, but also in what is human sometimes, you know?
Yeah, and I think especially we can say that for people out there knowing about how the situation in Girona, for example, is, there's a lot of social media going around what's happening in Girona. There's a lot of people riding their bikes, pros and recreational level, and lots of them riding together. And there are some of them doing like cool videos, and there are some of them training serious because they make their money out of it, and they come together. And at some point, those two groups coming together, they clash because they have different interests in rides.
Absolutely.
And that's the thing you, as you just said yourself, you have to balance about, because also some of the friends you have are not pro.
No.
And some of the friends you have, they enjoy cycling.
Yeah.
Out there and not looking at power numbers.
Exactly.
Even though then for you, every now and then, one should think about, okay, I'm doing this at a pro level. I have to rebalance myself again, because I did probably one ride a month with the friends group, which is totally fine then. But if we get to two ride per week with the friends and you testing yourself then, as we also discovered in the beginning, and I already knew that things of these could happen in the beginning, because at first hand you got healthy again and you embraced cycling again. And what you did then was riding your bike without restructured training at that moment, because the thing was getting healthy again.
Exactly.
And then changing that habit, as you said again, of being happy on a bike to also readjusting how your current level is and how you're feeling on the bike, and having also not your inward perspective but also the outward perspective.
Absolutely.
From me then as your coach, that hurts in some ways in the beginning, and it's hard to realize, and that's what I knew already about in the beginning. And that's especially why in the beginning we were in such close contact, also to make sure, okay, why is this happening?
Yeah.
Is this happening because you try to test yourself, or you're riding in a group?
Yeah.
Because there's different, we spoke about this as well, there's different approaches riding in a group.
Yeah.
And there's no group in this world where you cannot say, okay, I'm backing off a bit on the climb.
No, that's true.
But you have to be yeah, you have to tell the group.
Yeah.
And that's the hard part then.
Yeah.
So it's also getting to learn how to adjusting your own goals through life with living with other people.
Absolutely. Yeah, because I'm writing for myself and I am working all of this work for myself. It is me who I want to do proud. And I think that is also where I start to look at it more as a job, in the way that some things just needs to be done right for the success to actually come, or to go get somewhere. Because I dream about being the strongest in a race and not being the strongest in the group, right? And I think that is where sometimes these two lines can get kind of messy. As soon as we go test ourselves in group rides every week, it's great. But my ambition is just a bit further than this, and that can be hard to remember in the moment, but something we have really worked on. And I think also, I mean, I don't ride with boys. I wish I could. I used to do it all the time, but there is just such a big difference. And this is not meant that I can't do it, but there is just also the approach is, I'm a professional now and I need to look at it as a job as well. And I'm lucky also, when I moved to Spain, it was a huge priority for me to have a strong social life outside of cycling, actually. And I put a big effort in getting local friends in Girona. It's very easy to just hang around cyclists, but they come and go, and they are often, I don't know, just like yourself. And I think I did a great effort getting like Catalan friends or Spanish friends from the beginning, so that Girona instantly felt like home. So that also makes me easier for me to go on a 4-hour ride alone, because I know I will have my social life happening in the evening or before the ride and stuff. So I think there is also a way of finding work-life balance mm-hmm. in not connecting all of your social aspects to your sport, but actually have it separate. And that is the same with me and like my boyfriend. We don't go ride together necessarily because we would also not go working together in an office. So I think there is a way of making quite good lines between what is life and what is work. And cycling is work, but it is also the best job in the world. So, I mean, in that way, it all comes together very well.
Yeah, and I think you the approach you just mentioned is a very, very, an approach. I'm missing the word right now. It's very, very grounded,
yeah.
Let's say, and it's very, very looking at it from a broader perspective, actually, which is very good because you try to adjust your life throughout the profession you do, throughout the work you do as a cyclist, to make sure that you get to know different things of life, to make sure that there's one perspective, your profession, that you can focus on it when you're doing it. But that also means that sometimes you have to cut short on meeting with friends and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the other things.
Yeah,
but I think so the last thing I wrote on my notebook right here actually is what we did today right here, because you spend right now the day between 10 a.m. and right now it's around 17:13 p.m. So it's been quite some time since you're already here right now. So what we did today was not only getting to know each other, so we also made an athletic checkup. And I spoke in this podcast in the Kickers Radio with Leon Kaiser a couple of weeks ago also about him and how he is using the Kickers Athletics, as we call them, and how he treated his back pain with that. Because heavy lifting or lifting has definitely a place in sports or in endurance sports, and is very, from a preventive perspective, very important. But at some point in the season, the heavy lifting makes the VLA or the glycolytic power of cyclists then rise up very, very much. And that's at some point something we like to, or we do not like to, because it hinders performance over longer periods of times. Up to a certain extent, let's say it like this, and that's why the athletics are so important. And you, I think, if someone will ask you afterwards what you did, you will say that there's a lot of movement patterns you did not do before, and a lot of unilateral movements, getting to feel how your body works and trying to activate muscles in certain patterns. And I think probably tomorrow, even though we did not do too many exercises, you will feel some of it as some sort of soreness.
Yeah, but for sure. Yeah, because what we targeted is all the muscles that I do not use on a regular basis, but that are super important for the muscles that I do use on a regular basis. So basically, we were laying on the mat for a while and doing different good exercises you showed me that targeted all the small muscles or bigger muscles as well that connects what we push and pedal with every day. So to kind of get the full picture and the holistic approach of how do we get the best power output. And I think that was really because I do yoga and I do stretching and things every morning, a bit of core and stuff. But to actually have like a more specific target of the things that I need to improve was really helpful, because we did a bike fitting afterwards where we kind of tried to like implement or also target muscles that I'm not activating so much on my current bike position, but that would be helpful for my pedal stroke and my power output for the new bike position we did and for the future. So glute activation, for instance. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And as you just said, also the bike fitting was there then to just check that everything we learned, or I learned specifically from the athletic checkup in the beginning, which was also quite some fun because your boyfriend joined us and you could have fun together watching how you're one another doing those exercises seeing who can activate the glutes better and who can't probably. That's also important to like have a like very strict perspective on that, but also every now and then re-embrace it with some fun in between.
For sure.
And then on the bike, seeing how high we can raise the saddle, for example, to make the glutes and your posterior chain work.
Yeah.
Or how low do we have to get to make it work? Because that's the thing that with usually when lots of bike fitting advisors out there, they just focus on plane angles.
Yeah.
And plane angles, if, for example, if your ankle and your heel is moved upwards and your toes are downwards, there's the knee angle might be the same, but the angle in your ankle is different, and that changes the whole dynamic of the position.
Yeah.
So only looking at a knee angle or hip angle without knowing how a person uses his or her body is very, very risky,
actually.
Sure. And then we did a lot of testing also with two different saddles, actually, and then improved the feeling of you on after changing the saddle, actually.
For sure.
And you've been using the other saddle, which you came with, for quite some time. Yeah, and when actually when not only unhappy about it because it worked as well. And now, right now, I'm very, very curious what will be happening on the weekend as well, when you will be racing Turnhout in Belgium.
Yes. But me too, because I think we did great changes today. And I both felt more comfortable, but also we did activate like more muscle and more my glutes, which was actually kind of the goal. Like, even from when you started coaching me, you've been giving me comments on my bike fitting just from watching my Instagram reels and stuff. So in some way, it's just, it feels like a very full circle moment to come here today and finally make these changes, or seeing where we can improve. Because also we had a call with my strength coach as well, where we talked about what we should work on with glute activation and these things. So today, put it all into like, perspective, but also make the changes that we have been
put it together
actually, the work I've done in winter, the training we've done, and now actually how I sit on the bike. It's just such a full circle, and why it is the coolest to get bike fitted by your coach. It's really it makes so much sense, and what a privilege, honestly, to have the full circle with just the one person helping you out. Is really, really cool, I think.
Yeah, that's, for me, that's also very, very great, actually, because then it also makes the whole experience of you being here today put together completely.
Yeah, exactly.
And then also having the option to see how you perform different movements.
Absolutely.
And then as an add-on, also knowing that you're working together with a strength coach in Girona. As you just said, we spoke about these things, and knowing that he's on the same side as I am and as you are. So he's on the same team, and we are not interfering with each other, because we connect well and can talk about these things and make sure that development over longer periods of time can be ensured.
Absolutely.
So that's very, very great.
I think so.
Cool. We just spoke around 1 hour.
That's crazy.
That's actually crazy.
It went really quick.
And I think maybe the last thing we can speak about is right now for the season. We just said on the weekend there's Turnhout in Belgium.
Yeah, yeah,
that's the gravel race in Belgium, where lots of people I know last year qualified for the world championships for the age group categories. And we know that Turnhout is a gravel race, pancake, flat, and very, very fast. Even though if we look at the whole year, we know that there is the trucker in your mind. And you're also, we speak a lot about the trucker, and you're reckoning a lot of the trucker gravel roads, because they are next to your home as well.
Yeah.
So that feels also belonging there, belonging to the trucker. Also, you knowing that 2 years ago, when you podiumed the trucker. That was a very, very nice experience.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's hard. I mean, I think we all speak a lot about trucker because it is by far the biggest event in Europe. And it's like a big, also it's a physical challenge. You can do the 360K or the 200K. So it is just a big day. And I think that will forever be a big goal of mine, both like, of course, result wise, but also just to have a great race out there. It is my home roads. I know every single rock and I know every single climb and descent. So of course that is a goal, but at the moment I'm also just so happy to be back racing. So even a race like Turnhout, which it doesn't really speak to my into my favor. I mean, I am good on the flat, so yes, I am from Denmark. I can push on the flat, and in the wind for sure also. But it's not super technical. But I'm just super excited to get back to racing and to be among the girls. And I hope I can approach every race like this year, that I am just happy to be here, honestly. That was how I felt in Santaval. Even though I was sick and didn't do so well result-wise, it was still such an accomplishment to be there, because at the end of the day, I just love racing. I love a good result, but I also just really, really love to race. And it's where my identity comes together after being injured. I think it's just where I feel complete again. And also, yeah, this is why we are pros. This is what we want. So I'm excited about Turnhout. I don't know how it will play out. I think it can be if a lot of road ladies shows up, maybe they have a great advantage. But again, if we end up playing it well or do a, I don't know, a breakaway or whatever, anything can happen. So this is also what I love gravel racing for. Like, sometimes it's an advantage to be a former mountain biker. Sometimes it's more an advantage being a road cyclist. But I love that we can be all, yeah.
Yeah, and for me it's of course knowing that at this moment in time, the main priorities over the last few weeks were not targeting a race like Turnhout.
No, exactly.
And then also seeing, okay, where are we standing right now? Because we learned a lot of what happened in Santaval and the days before Santaval. And then also when you dropped out on the second stage, which also didn't feel nice then, but it's also part then of the game, because at one point when you're ill, you can't get back.
No.
So you can't get healthy within half an hour. No. And then that's the situation. And one has to make the best out of it for the next time, and also in this moment in time. And to also see, depending on when we knowing the trucker will happen, and I think right now it's 8 weeks or 7 weeks till trucker. I'm not too sure about it right now, but knowing that there is some development still left for trucker, and then even knowing that the season doesn't stop after trucker, and then after the season it's going into the next season, also thinking about what long-term development are we targeting. And that's the thing that I'm already thinking about. And those certain steps and those certain goals on the way till there, and continuing the journey we've already started, and making sure that week by week, day by day, we start to make better decisions, and you start to understand, as you already did, understanding or did learn to understand your body even better.
Absolutely.
To make smarter decisions for yourself.
Absolutely.
And that's the main thing. And that's a journey which probably we can say that never really ends, especially in pro-level sports, when you always have to be, or when you try to be in the mix all the time, knowing that there are many other girls, many other people who are also targeting the same competitions as you are, and who are also taking every, or let's say in Germany we say drehen jeden Stein um. I'm not sure what it's in Danish. probably to all listeners out there, they can feel right now that my English is getting worse and worse, because the day has been
running out.
I'm running out of words right now. No, I'm just joking. But there are a lot of other girls who are also targeting this, and they also make it their priority.
Yeah.
Meaning there is no room for doing like a 50-50 approach.
No.
And that's the thing. Why this journey is so nice to be a part of, and so nice also to try to embrace it.
Absolutely, and trying to look at the big picture when one race doesn't go well, or if one season is a bit off. Like it is so cool to work on like the long term goals, but also just the long term development, so that our success is not defined by each individual race, but more on what progress we make over time. I love that.
Exactly. Great. I think we've recorded an episode with quite some detailed view on how your life was in the past, what you learned throughout the journey, especially throughout the last year about yourself, and also the positive things you learned about yourself, and also getting back to have a menstrual cycle, which is stable and which makes you feel good month in, month out, and makes you feel that there is constant energy there. Yeah. And training is one of the nicest things I can see as a coach.
Absolutely.
Because it builds the basis of all the work you can do in the future. Absolutely. Then as well. And I think we can just thank all the listeners.
Yes.
At least I have to thank them, and I hope they understand some of the English I did today. And I can only say thank you for your appearance in our podcast. Probably we'll record another episode throughout the season, and then we'll see when the next meetup will be, probably around any race or around here
sure.
In Heidelberg again.
For sure. Thank you so much for having me. It was such a pleasure. I had so much fun doing this.
Great. Sounds good. And then I can only say thank you to our listeners out there, and see and hear you in the next couple of days. Ciao, ciao.
Ciao.